The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
We need a revolution. There's only one solution. I need somebody to show me, somebody to show me love. We need a revolution.
Hello and welcome to the revolution, the peaceful revolution on the Liberty Hour of Informed Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming to CHDTV and other platforms. I'm your host, Bernadette Pager. Get the business out of the way. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KKNW and CHDTV. Those are two awesome free speech platforms. We're not giving medical or legal advice. And this hour of free speech radio is brought to you by Informed Choice Washington. So if you're not familiar with them yet, please go to informedchoicewa.org. You can sign up to get free news and get action alerts from informedchoicewa.org. They're very active in Washington State. I say they, but it's also me still. I'm still on the board of Informed Choice Washington. Excellent people just doing amazing work. And if you can give a little something that to that organization that funds this hour and funds some of the great work they're doing in the state of Washington, trying to really restore some freedoms that were lost, that other states still cling to, they need to get those back in Washington state. So please think about helping out informedchoicewa.org. I've got Javier Figueroa joining me again in the second hour of radio. Hello, Javier.
Hello, Bernadette.
So in that first hour, we were talking about, you know, the soil and the health, what makes life and health and freedom thrive. And this hour is really the culmination of the greed politics trying to suppress and control all of that, right? And for that, we've got an expert on it. James Roguski is joining us, and I'm so grateful that he can join us once again on the show. Hi, James.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So glad to have you here. And I'm so, you know, all of us, there's so much going on right now in so many different areas. I love that this subject is your passion and you're staying on top of it and you're doing such a great job of educating everybody. It's so important for that. I want to ask, before we get started, how in the world did you get started in becoming the expert that you are on this topic?
Well, you know, you said something just a moment ago about, you know, agriculture and health and all that. And a little more than 2 years ago, you asked me, so this is what happened. I live in the Los Angeles area, have a very small yard. We've got maybe 500 square feet. And, oh, I don't know, 7 years ago or so, we had a drought and everything just burnt to a crisp. And after that, I planted, I think I've got like 16 or 17 fruit trees. I mean, I got a little jungle going out there. And so I was working out there a little more than 2 years ago. And at some point I just stopped and I looked up to the sky. I said, you know, God, I volunteer whatever it is, you know, life has for me. I volunteer to do it. And I've done that in the past. And I've had like, you know, instantaneous, you know, ideas come to me and has led me into very interesting, you know, projects. And I got a big fat nothing. And so we were talking earlier, what happened was later on that year, just a couple of weeks after that, I learned on January 21st that the, this is 2022, that the FDA authorized for use, outpatient injectable use in infants, the wonderful product that I call Run Death Is Near. And my head just went, oh, you got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a couple of articles only to wake up to an email from my website hosting provider that everything I'd done for the last decade was gone. They gave me a day's notice. And I was like, oh, all right. I guess that opens up some free time for something new, right? And shortly thereafter, I started doing some research into what was being talked about at the time, which was just an idea. It had started a little bit before that on December 1st, 2021, about this thing called the Pandemic Treaty. Mm. And so I did a large amount of research, published a huge article on Substack, which is where I landed, and published that on March 24th, 2022. I thought I was done. It's like, okay, you know, did a bunch of research, here's what they're doing. 4 days later, I get dragged out of bed by something that 4 in the morning, I'm like, I got to go search for something. And I find this article that had a blog on it, and they had a line that said that they had obtained a document. Well, I'm a curious guy. I clicked on the hyperlink, and down the rabbit hole I went, and it was proposed amendments to the international health regulations that had been submitted 2 months prior. And this was first I was learning about it, and I realized that that's when the lightning bolt hit me. I was like, oh, this is not what people are talking about. This is a totally related, but totally different. What in the world is going on here? And so a couple of days later, I published the first article about that. And I'm still, my personal slogan for me is I want to get out of the who and on with the new. I mean, there's a lot of things that I would rather be talking about, but you know, this is all coming to maybe not a final head. You know, it's not like we're going to pop this boil or you know, get rid of this carbuncle and pop this zit and get done. They're going to drag this darn thing out, it looks like, but I'm dedicated to seeing it through to the end.
There you go.
Wow. So yeah. Glad that you're doing that. Yeah, I mean, you're right. And until the WHO gets completely disbanded, they're going to keep pushing. And really, our ultimate goal is every nation to retain their sovereignty and get together to talk about things. But everybody needs to retain their sovereignty.
Well, every person needs to stand up for their fundamental freedoms. You know, there's a term, I don't know, maybe I'm a stickler for, you know, how people use words. And so part of what I've been doing is translating English to English, because they have their own, you know, bureaucratic language. Yeah. And, you know, doctors have their lingo and lawyers have their legal ease, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they say things, and when the average person hears what is said, it sounds lovely, sounds wonderful.
Yes.
But when you understand that the words don't mean what you think they mean, it always keeps coming back. The scene from the movie Princess Bride, you know, you keep using that word. I don't think you know what that word means. and sovereignty is one of those words, because part of the misinformation that's out there, these negotiations are not, this is going to blow some people's minds if they've been paying attention, these negotiations are not an attack on national sovereignty. They are not, you know, the WHO trying to make the director general be, you know, your personal doctor and tell you what you can and cannot do. The information that's been spreading around is from somewhere. There's reasons why these things come in. But what's actually in the documents, if you actually sit down and you plow through this boring language, is not those things. In some ways, it's actually worse. So right. Let's see what we can clarify, and we'll go from there.
Okay. It does sound like I was one of the ones who was misinformed by the language. So let's go for it.
So in the proposed new agreement that most people call the Pandemic Treaty, actually, if anybody pulls up that document, you can go, you know, to my websites or the WHO. In Article 24, paragraph 3 on page 19, I was just talking to somebody from Georgia, so I have it in my head. It says right in the document, you know, this is not any of the things that people have been saying it is. And the definition of sovereignty that's in Article 3, which is the principles, they're actually, nations started these negotiations to express and secure their sovereignty or their sovereign control over biological resources. Now, what? Most people... You know what? I was going to say that most people would say, what? And you just did. Yeah. Okay. I have a background where I managed a couple of mom and pop urban nutrition stores for a good 15 years. And I learned way back, you know, quite some time ago, that corporations, pharmaceutical companies were very good at learning about indigenous cultures, healing modalities, you know, plants and herbs and minerals, whatever. And they would pirate that information, you know, come in, speak to the native population, learn how they treat something, get the plant, identify the chemical compound, bring it back to the laboratory. This is how they found ivermectin. Ivermectin was found, my understanding, some bacteria found on a golf course. And Merck figured out how to tweak it a little bit so they could patent it. And so they would take natural compounds, pirate them, change them a little bit, and then go make millions of dollars. Well, the Convention for Biological Diversity in 1992 said, hey, if you want access to our wisdom, access to our plants and knowledge, our biological resources, you're going to have to share some of the benefits. So they have an access and benefit sharing, ABS. On one level, you go, that makes sense. You don't want corporations coming in, pirating this information, learning from people, and not sharing the money. Well, hold on a moment. If you can think of going back to late 2019, early 2020, there was this genetic sequence that was called WIV1, and then they changed the name to SARS-CoV-2, just a little data file. Now, whether or not viruses exist and whether or not this is all smoke and mirrors, you cannot argue that the data file that purported to be the genetic sequence of some scary, scary thing, the data file was real.
Yes.
And it was ultimately worth a couple of $100 billion, if not a few trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Omicron popped up and South Africa and Botswana identified it, and they felt they were obligated to turn it over to the world, which they did, they're not happy that Pfizer and Moderna took that, put it into the boosters, made a couple of billion dollars, and they weren't able to get contracts to get any, you know, the products that they felt that they were the ones whose intellectual property was used to make money. And so in some of the early amendments that go back a year and a half now, in my language, right, my way of expressing it, they said, we're not giving you any more stinking pathogens unless you share the benefits.
Huh.
And to this day, this morning, they had a briefing session that this is what they're arguing over still, the pathogen access and benefit sharing system. These negotiations are happening, not for whatever reason people think. It's not the WHO trying to take over the world, although they want to take over a piece of it. It's the nations who feel they got screwed,
right,
by handing over information that Big Pharma turned into billions of dollars, and they want their piece of the pie. Now, on one level, you go, I understand that. They got their information was pirated and then profited from. But then you have to stop and go, well, wait a minute, though. And this is the core thing that I think everyone in your audience, you know, I see the books on your bookshelf. Hold on just a moment. The jabs don't work. They don't stop infection. They don't stop transmission. They derange, you know, a person's immune system. They cause disability, you know, disease, disability, and death, both excess and sudden. The tests don't, you know, they're not accurate. They're not even really tests. The PCR process is a laboratory process that has value, but it's not a diagnostic. And hold on, Article 21 of the WHO Constitution gives the World Health Assembly the authority to set standards and write regulations for a handful of things. Cause of death, well, that was an issue, right, with COVID.
Right.
Diagnostic testing, well, that's how they caused the case-demic. Quality and purity of pharmaceutical and biological products. Did anybody ever find any junk in those jabs?
Right.
And advertising and labeling. Oh, it's safe and effective. You can trust us. And that blank insert, just look the other way. And, you know, there's no problems here. So the things that the World Health Assembly, not the World Health Organization, but the 194 member nations who send delegates and they meet once a year, what they're supposed to be working on, what they have the authority to write regulations about, they're not even talking about. They're doing something totally different. They're organizing a corrupt business deal to set up, you know, essentially a mafia, to have a cartel. I call it the new OPEC, right? It's not the oil producing and exporting countries. It's the Organization of Pandemic Emergency Corporations. Huh. They learned that if they go look for a pathogen and they have that information, it's really valuable. So they want to have a pathogen access benefit sharing agreement. And the question is, you know, how are we going to divvy up the spoils? Hmm. No one is saying, excuse me, but you're really talking about biological warfare, research, development, proliferation. Stop. This is not how you prevent the next pandemic. I'm overstating it, but do you really want to have a Wuhan Institute of Virology on every street corner and go out into the neighborhood and look through everybody's poop to see some pathogen that you can bring into the lab and mess with, get the genetic sequence so that you can profit from the products that get made based on that information? That is what we're dealing with here. Now, if you've never heard any of this, you're probably better off, because now you're seeing what's really being negotiated. A lot of the news that's out there about what is being negotiated is totally not what I just said.
Right.
And what is happening as we speak, well, it's a little bit late in Geneva, so it was, you know, earlier this morning for me, is they're not reaching any agreement. They're having a difficult time because there's a lot of money, you know, billions of dollars involved here. And so the poor nations in general are trying to extract a pound of flesh from big pharma. And the big nations are standing behind big pharma, basically shilling, protecting them from somebody who's trying to get a piece of their pie. Nobody's in the room going, excuse me, you people are out of your mind. You missed out on all of these, you know, wonderfully high-tech, you know, biological weapon injections, and you're arguing that you want to have geographically distributed manufacturing so that you can make these in your home country to jab your own people. What could possibly be the reason other than you missed out on the profits? Because right. You're lucky you missed out on the harm.
Yeah. And is there a single word anywhere in what you've been reading in these treaties and agreements that are set forth that mention clean water, good sanitation, vitamin D, vitamin A, zinc, you know, the fundamental building blocks of health that make people resilient to any virus that can come along? I mean, I don't understand why nobody is saying, wait a minute, I've got an immune system still. Why in 2024 are you guys terrified of viruses when, you know, are they addressing anything about the building blocks of health, or is it only about the products, the profitable products?
There are some civil society organizations who support WASH, which is water and I forget what the acronym stands for, water and sanitary health, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they've been so there's maybe a line about water.
Mm.
Okay? Other than that, with all the other things you said, not so much. There was a news brief from the WHO about 2 weeks ago where they talked about an outbreak of cholera in Malawi, in East Africa. And their solution was not to send, you know, water purification equipment or, you know, infrastructure or even therapies for people who might be dealing with cholera. They sent 1.4 million tests. And so I'm pretty sure if somebody has cholera, they, you know, they don't really need a test to let
them
know.
They don't.
And so, you know, but I had a wonderful conversation earlier with, actually, this Brian Bridle was in on the call, and he brought forth some information from the World Economic Forum about disease X and how they were planning. And it was in exact alignment in the regards that they don't really care about the things that you and I care about. If they can set up the contracts to buy the products, to put in the warehouse, to be ready so that when somebody is afraid because the propaganda works on them, that those products get shipped out of the warehouse to be utilized or sit in a warehouse and go bad somewhere, it doesn't matter, because then those products have to get replenished. And if you just understand wholesale retail, if they get the wholesale contract to supply the products that, you know, everybody wants to believe are going to help, and the contracts get paid and money gets shifted, that's what the WHO wants to be in charge of. They have a distribution hub in Dubai that they're proud about. It's 20,000 square meters. That's about 4 football fields. Can you imagine the corrupt contract, you know, handouts that you could give if you were in charge? That's just one of their 6 regions. Okay. So what we're dealing with here is organized crime masquerading as concern for humanity. If you just think about what, I'm not going to settle the discussion or the debate, but if you think about the options of what caused, you know, the outbreak that is called COVID-19, and you say, well, let's spend billions of dollars looking for pathogens everywhere we possibly can, bring them into a WHO coordinated laboratory network, find the genetic sequence, turn that into drugs and jabs, and put the WHO in charge of the distribution of those products, and then have the director general in the amendments be able to declare not just a public health emergency of international concern, PHEIC, pronounced fake, kid you not, public health emergency of international concern, pretty much just because he wants to. There really isn't any criteria. It's just he says so. Now they want to add in the amendments, not just a fake, but what I call a pre-fake, an early action alert, which the way the language is, you could interpret it that if any nation gives any kind of information that something's going on, he's obligated to declare an early action alert.
Right.
They said they got 37,000 of those types of notifications from the various countries. There's always something going on that they report. So you've got the fake, you've got the pre-fake, and then they want to have the post-fake. That's not what they call it. That's what I call it. The pandemic emergency. That's not a pandemic yet. It's a pandemic emergency. And if you read the definition, it's, again, pretty much just because he says so, right? And then they do have a definition of a pandemic, which will be the first one ever in any kind of law. If you've ever heard anybody use the word pandemic, it didn't actually have a legal definition. It's just a word that they maybe defined on their blog. The definition of a pandemic in the amendments would not require anyone to ever have died. It's just the spread of disease. And again, hold on just a moment. How do you determine, you know, by some test, what these diseases may or may not be? The symptom patterns are so similar to, you know, things that are called other names. What you're really dealing with is, hey, we need an insurance code to get paid for this. What do you want to call it? Mm-hmm. Okay. That insurance code lets us do these protocols. This other insurance code lets us produce, you know, do these protocols. One of these, and I've heard this from people, one of them gets highlighted in a different marker color on the patient records because there's a lot more money to be made treating that than there is to be treating this. Somebody comes in with a headache, could be a brain tumor, you know, might just be something that's going to go away on its own because it's not a big deal. But where's the money? That's what I encourage everybody. Follow the money and you'll see what's really going on here.
Now, what amazes me is that when SARS, when this whole scamdemic came out, the speed at which the ICD-10 code came out for this new category was mind-blowingly fast. ICD codes take sometimes years. This isn't a matter of, well, I wouldn't even say it was a matter of months. It was already pre-positioned fairly early on to just go out there as soon as possible.
So to try to, I know we still have, you know, half a show to go, but to try to summarize this so people can wrap their heads around it. Number one, whatever you think is going on with the WHO, the amendments to the international health regulations, the new agreement, treaty / framework convention, whatever you've heard, it's probably different than what you've heard. Things change, okay? They're still changing. They're in the midst of negotiations. They still have next week And they're probably going to fail to reach an agreement and have everyone sign on to an ongoing process. But to summarize it, wherever you may live, you had a different experience than, you know, someone who lived in a different location. But to whatever extent your local tyrants managed to do whatever they wanted to do to abuse your personal rights and freedoms, they didn't need any amendments to the international health regulations or any stinking treaty to do whatever it is they did. And so those local issues, whether it's a mask mandate, a vaccine mandate, social distancing, lockdown, curfews, you know, coercion to be able to keep your job or go to school or go into a business or whatever, those local problems still have to be dealt with on a local basis. And different municipalities, different states, different provinces, we've got a whole different set of, you know, abuse all around the world. What's in the amendments is mind-boggling. So give me 5 minutes to just try to explain what is going on with the amendments.
Okay. James, I want to tell people again where they can go, like, read. So at your Substack, jamesroguski.substack.com. You can look it up, and like I've got pulled on the screen now for the radio audience, an update on the WHO negotiations is your most recent post. Do you link to the language? Do you have all the language there?
Yeah, you know, if anyone, if you click on my name at the very, very top there, you can click on the archive, and, you know, nothing that I've ever written in my entire life is behind any kind of paywall. So just go read everything and catch up. And I'll do it in the middle of the show here. We usually do it at the end, but everybody's welcome to call me. My phone number is on the bottom of every article, and it's 310-619-3055. The details will blow your mind. It's, you know, confusing and ridiculous. But let me try to give the big overview picture. Okay?
Okay.
And so all of the things that most people are rightfully most concerned about, the, you know, mask mandates, jab mandates, you know, whether or not you're able to gain access to the types of treatments that you want, all of the mess that the vast majority of people had to deal with, that's a local issue. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a doctor, you know, that's your medical review board, or in Canada, you know, your college of medicine or whatever it might be. Those issues, we all really need to get in under the hood and look at the local laws. I'll give an example. I live in the Los Angeles area in Glendale, but there's a city near me called Palmdale. And the activists there a couple of years ago, they weren't having it. They just got some spray paint and such, and they made signs and they stuck them in the ground by, you know, entrance to the highway or whatever, and got a group of people together, and they browbeat their city council into submission. And they passed an ordinance that said there shall be no mandates for masks or jabs in the city of Palmdale. And so they didn't deal with, I mean, they dealt with it so that they didn't have to put up with it. And so that's what we need everywhere, you know, around the world, is local people working on the local level, insisting that their rights be respected. And that didn't happen everywhere. Just right. The opposite happened. That's still the same. Okay. What's going on with the WHO is not Tedros going to tell you that you have to do anything. There's a lot of confusion about that. What's left over in the amendments to the international health regulations is something that actually is in there since 2005 that they want to make stronger. And again, it's not an attack on national sovereignty. We talked about how nations want to protect their sovereign right to their biological resources. This one in the amendments is a little different, and it's so tricky that I, you know, when the light bulbs go off and you hear what I'm saying, let me know and I'll stop talking about it. In Article 31, it says that national authorities can compel international travelers to get a medical examination or prophylaxis or prevention or a vaccine or be isolated or quarantined. So it's not the case that, you know, your city or state or country can do that to you. Another nation can do that to you when you travel outside of your country. And so, you know, if you go on holiday to Africa and you land and they go, oh, we just had an Ebola outbreak. And our national policy is you've got to have an exam and you've got to do prophylaxis and you've got to get a jab. Otherwise, you're isolated or you're quarantined. It's not the WHO saying you have to do these things. It's an agreement amongst all of the member nations. There's two extra in the international health regulations. So there's actually 196. They're party to the regulations, but they're not members, right, of the WHO. And they want to strengthen that, which is bad enough already. I object to the word compel.
Right.
No one has the authority to compel me to do anything to my body, period. How is that even in the international health regulation? That's just an unbelievable violation of fundamental human rights and bodily autonomy. But they want to add amendments to Article 24 and 27 that would enable authorities to institute isolation and quarantine as appropriate.
Well,
that's frightening to me, okay?
Yeah.
And I think they want it to be frightening because they want travel to be restricted, and they figured out not a loophole but a gaping hole. And
right.
The best example is the tennis player Novak Djokovic, mm-hmm. Was properly named because he did not get vaccinated, Novak. And when he wanted to play tennis in Australia or in the United States, he was not allowed in. Now, had he been a citizen, there wouldn't have been anything anybody could say. If you're a citizen and you leave, you can come back. But if you're, and I know somebody who's a married couple, one of them is a citizen, one is not, they just had a green card. Had they left to go to Mexico and come back legitimate, you know, travel, the citizen spouse could have done that no problem, unjabbed. But the person who's not a citizen wouldn't have been able to get back in. Hmm. And so this is the game that they're playing. Everybody is screaming about, you know, the WHO is trying to take away our national sovereignty. Well, that's not what's happening at all. It's actually the exact opposite. Enabling nations to stop foreigners who are traveling in is an expression of national sovereignty that a lot of people would like to see the United States expressing on the southern border, okay? But that's a decoy as well, in the sense that what you might think should be done there to stop people from just coming and going as they please, they want to implement that against people who are traveling legitimately. And I think everyone understands what I'm saying. I didn't hear the light bulb necessarily go off, but the point is,
yeah,
if you know that you might be isolated or quarantined or, you know, jabbed or whatever it might be, you're hesitant to travel. And mm-hmm. I know, very specifically, people who are relatively well known in our freedom movement started the organizations that they are part of because they were harmed by getting jabs in order to travel. Mm-hmm. And this is the game that's going on with the WHO and the amendments that nobody's talking about.
So the way, do I have this right? So like here in the United States during COVID, we had CDC, NIH saying things, the president, White House, everybody saying certain things about COVID, right? And the information went to all the governors about emergency use authorization products, certain information went out. Mm-hmm. And then it was all of the different states decided what to do with that information. Mm-hmm. Some states were a little better than others as far as really understanding these are emergency use experimental products. Other states took what they were sent, ignored the fine print that you weren't supposed to mandate any of this stuff, right? And then went nuts with it. So it sounds as if the amendments to the World Health Organization treaty is going to create the authority for nations to go crazy if they want.
Well, no, and that's part of where the misinformation is.
Okay, so I'm still not understanding.
And no, absolutely, it's perfect. Early on in 2022, with that very first article that I did, one of the things that I discovered was, I'll give this date and let everybody stew on the date for a little while. In the Federal Register, the CDC put in a final ruling about some of these different things on January 19th, 2017. And one of the things that was in there was the definition of the requirements that our Secretary of Health and Human Services could use to declare a public health emergency, PHE, public health emergency. One of the criteria was he gets to declare an emergency in the United States, and the only justification needed is, well, the Director General of the WHO said so, so I get to say so too.
Right.
Okay.
Now, that's not science, that's not data, that's not evidence. That's just, well, he said so, so I can say so too. And then when he says so, and the legislation, boom, magically showed up where, oh, as long as there's a public health emergency, you can say it's COVID and make a whole lot of money for your hospital, but doing this, 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 and this, everybody said, oh, well, here are the rules. And so if you declare a state emergency or a county or a city or whatever, Javier Becerra was interviewed about a year ago in Aspen, Colorado. And one of the first, actually not one of the first question that they asked him was, what would you like Americans to know about the Department of Health and Human Services? Well, he didn't miss a beat. He said immediately, oh, well, the federal government does not have any authority whatsoever over healthcare. No, 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 no. But we do have a lot of money.
Yes.
And when we throw that money around, it attracts people to Medicare and Medicaid and whatever program. And so when, you know, the CARES Act came out, and you could make tons of money by having a patient have a positive COVID test, which is bogus, but very profitable. Okay. Or, you know, you stick a tube down their throat, put them on a ventilator and give them some midazolam or other things. That's a couple grand a day. Right. So cha-ching, you know, here are the rules by which we're playing this game. Now, arguably, that's not the best treatment, but it's arguably some of the most profitable treatments.
Right.
And so it skewed the way healthcare was provided, and everybody went along because, well, if you don't meet these certain requirements, your school board doesn't get that grant and your hospital can't accept Medicare. And if a hospital can't accept Medicare, they're out of business. Okay. And so it's a game of coercion and deception and psychology. It's got nothing to do with how you properly care for an individual who's, you know, suffering some dis-ease. That should be between you and whomever you take advice from and provide service to you for your health. But they've figured out how to game the system by incentivizing behavior that's profitable, not necessarily beneficial. Well, around the world, other countries are like, well, we went in on that game. That worked out really well. You guys made billions.
Yep.
And while we handed you the genetic sequence that you made products that made a lot of money, oh boy, we were dumb to do that. We should have kept it for it. But they didn't have the intellectual property or the technical know-how to be able to profit from it. And that's what these negotiations are battling over.
So the amendments then make the game bigger and more easily played and dangerous, well, or I'm missing here.
We're dealing with the cognitive dissonance, and I'll try to explain it. In the attempt to deal with this financial trade dispute,
yeah. Right?
The poor nations looked at nations like Canada, who got a contract for 400 million jabs for 40 million people. And they said, well, you know, we're not getting any of these products. We can't get, you know, why they wanted the jabs, you know, is a crazy question. They should have learned, you know, by now that that was not a good thing. But they were the ones who called for these negotiations. On December 1st of 2021, they had a special session of the World Health Assembly, and it's not that the WHO submitted all of these amendments to take over the world. What happened is the various nations submitted amendments to attempt to empower the WHO to force the pharmaceutical companies in the wealthier nations to give up the things that they're profiting from and share some of those benefits in those products with them. So the whole premise of why this is happening is been misrepresented and misunderstood. What then happened, and this is probably the missing piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
Nations like Bangladesh stated, well, the definition of the term recommendation in the International Health Regulation is reasonable. It says non-binding advice. Well, any grade school kid would probably recognize that a recommendation is non-binding advice. Well, they wanted to cross out non-binding,
right,
so that the director general would be given authority to say to a company or a nation, you manufacture this, you've got to give it to us so that we can deliver it where it's needed. So they wanted to empower the director general specifically to be in charge of the means of production and distribution of pandemic-related products. They wanted someone to step in to force the distribution of the products that they weren't able to get. Well, that lasted for about a month and a half, from December to, well, actually, I should explain this a little bit. Those were presented on December 30th of 2022, kept secret until December of 2022. Then I found them and reported on them. But throughout that period, all the way until February 6th of 2023, they had a expert review committee look over what the nations had proposed as a solution to this trade dispute. And the expert panel reported on February 6th, 2023, hey, you guys can't do that. If you cross out non-binding and make recommendations, obligations, or orders, that's going to change the whole relationship here. We can't do that. And they said, you know, what has to be done is different than that. So the review committee and their advice knocked down some of the requests that the nations made to put Tedros in charge of what's going on. But unfortunately, not too many people read that 97-page review committee report. And then they kept everything super secret. Mm-hmm. So for the last year, there's been this rumor going around that Tedros is going to take over the healthcare of the world. Well, that's just not what's in these documents. It was for about a month and a half that we knew about it, but it got kicked to the curb. And then finally, about 2 months ago, I found a leaked version of it that clearly documented, no, recommendations are still non-binding advice, and no, director general is not going to be in charge of telling your doctor what to do when you're in the, you know, meeting. That's all local stuff. Okay. And so that secrecy caused people to overreact to what was originally put in the amendments, but is long gone and is not in there now. And so what's in there now is the residue of something that's been going on for two decades, and they want to make it stronger. That's the international travel restrictions. So the compartmentalization of what's going on here, all of the things that people should be concerned about, the mask mandates, jab mandates, you know, whether or not you get access to medical care or can go to your job or go into business or go to school or whatever, all that local stuff is local stuff. And if you think that something like Louisiana Senate Bill 133 is going to solve the problem by saying, oh, the WHO doesn't have any jurisdiction in our state, they never did. There's nothing in the amendments that would give that to them. That's a red herring based on old information that hasn't been around for a year. And it's not going to help if somebody from Louisiana gets on a cruise boat in New Orleans and goes to Jamaica and there's a, you know, outbreak of dengue fever or something. And the local authorities say, oh, well, you're going into quarantine. You're going to get jabbed. You're not going to be able to say, oh, but we have this Louisiana law that protects us, because you're not in Louisiana right. anymore, Dorothy. Right. This is Jamaica. And so the confusion is part of, you know, the times in which we live, where if you misdiagnose the problem and you prescribe the wrong solution, you're not going to have an improvement in the disease that we're dealing with in all of this governance over how we handle our healthcare. It comes down to me to a very simple question, or it'll start with a statement. The jabs don't work. They're not even jabs. I mean, they're not even vaccines.
Right.
They don't stop infection. They don't stop transmission. They cause more harm. Why would any nation want geographical distribution of the manufacture of these biological weapons? The tests, the PCR is not even a test. And, you know, Carrie Mullis, the creator of it, won a Nobel Prize, said this is not a diagnostic tool.
Right.
So the premise behind both the amendments for international travel or the corrupt business deal to take investment from wealthy nations and funnel it to build out the other fake, the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex, to build out that industry in poorer nations, predicated on, well, we need more tests, we need more jabs, and we need to go find pathogens, right? If you do a search on the CDC's website for surveillance of wastewater, all over the country, they're looking into people's septic systems and sewage treatment plants to find the next polio or whatever it is they might be looking for. But in the amendments, there's a two-line cross out in Annex 2 where nations are not going to have to report any cases of wild type poliovirus because there isn't any wild type poliovirus anymore. The only polio is what's caused by vaccine induced poliovirus.
Right.
The vaccine escape has gone wild now. Yeah.
And so step number one is to compartmentalize what's really going on. The local stuff is still local. So whatever you need to do to get in under the hood in your city, your county, your state, and look at the laws and how those laws were abused by authorities who overstepped their authority, we all got to do that on a local basis.
Okay.
The amendments are about international travel and quarantine, isolation, vaccines, and so forth. And the treaty is just a corrupt business deal so that the WHO can hand out billions of dollars to their cronies.
Okay.
Interesting. So it sounds like this is also part of the overall strategy to harmonize international rules and regulations in order to basically turn on and off the global economy as whoever sees fit in order to restrict, either promote economic growth somewhere or destroy economic viability elsewhere.
You know, I don't know how to explain what just happened to me, but my experience in life has been whenever somebody speaks the truth, I get a shiver go through my body. And you just did that. Thank you for the experience. back in November of 2022, they had submitted the amendments, but they had not made them public. So I was searching all over the place looking to see if I could find them. And I ended up watching the B20 meeting in Bali. It's not the G20. It's all the business leaders.
Right.
And the Indonesian health minister presented information, and it really stuck with me. He said a couple of things. With what you were talking about with business and commerce and all that, he said, look, next time, Indonesia is proud that they'd submitted amendments so that if you're properly jabbed or properly tested, then you'll be able to move around, and so we won't have to lock down the whole world. Okay, you got it. I can tell you get it. So the idea is, if you don't want us to abuse you and lock you down totally, then you have to submit to a test or a jab. And a lot of people are quite willing to do that. And that's the problem. Because number one, the tests are not tests and the jabs don't work. Then he went on to say, and this was a little bit about something different because it was right in the beginnings of the pandemic fund that the Defense Department of the United States is funding to the tune of $5 billion over the next 5 years through the World Bank. He said to the audience of business leaders, he said, look, we've got this multi-billion-dollar fund. This is a great business opportunity. Go invest. And so in November of 2022, I was blessed to have the whole plan laid out before me by the Indonesian health minister, who's not a doctor. He proudly said, oh, I've only been in this job for like a little bit more than a year. He's been a banker for 30 years.
Just and, like in England.
You know, and so when you look at it, it's like they told you in November, this is what we're working on, right? They want a framework convention, which is not the same as just any old treaty. Think framework convention for climate change. You agree to an open-ended contract, open-ended framework, and then year after year after year, a bunch of, you know, distinguished bureaucrats get to go have a party somewhere, and they meet and get together and decide the fate of the world, and whatever they decide filters through. And since you signed on to the framework and you agreed, whatever they decide later, you got to do it. Yep. And that's how we got into the mess with climate and carbon and all that stuff. And so the current status of what's going on is most people don't know, but in 2022, they lied and they said that they adopted amendments and they never even voted.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get people to pay attention to the level of fraud to which they're willing to go. They were supposed to provide the final version, final package of amendments this year by January 27th. And they know that they blew right past that deadline. Finally, a couple of days ago, 49 senators spoke up and said, hey, wait a minute, you know, what are you guys doing? They're having a new version of the amendments is due May 10th. And on May 16th and 17th, they're having what I guess will be their final negotiations. And so on the treaty, they're still meeting next week. And what they're proposing is, well, you know, we're not going to reach agreement. So we'll agree that there's three items, the One Health surveillance and the pathogen access and benefit sharing and all of the money. We'll start up some new negotiations. So just agree now and we'll agree to all of those things by May 31st, 2026. So they just want to stretch this out. Just sign on now, sign on the dotted line, and you know, we'll have something waiting for you in 2 years. Just agree to it now. It's insane.
It is insane. And we're down to like the last minute and a half here, James. I think I'm finally getting it. And basically it's act locally, get back your powers and authority and freedoms locally, and then fight. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to travel because it's all about international big business corporations controlling
and,
you.
And in
way.
The treaty, they want to take a bunch of money from wealthy nations to go build out their business ventures in poor nations so they can find something to scare you with again and again and again.
And again. Oh, wow. This is amazing. Thank you so much, James. James Roguski, it's Roguski. Go to Substack, look him up, follow what he says. It takes a little bit, but once you get it, you're starting to get it. Thank you, Javier. Thank you, James. You've been listening to The Liberty Hour on Informed Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and CHDTV. We'll see you next week.
Are you suffering from a sinking feeling that the COVID-19 pandemic is being blown out of proportion and that nothing in the news is making any sense? If so, then there is a fact-based, science-driven news show designed just for you. My name is Del Bigtree, and I am the host of The High Wire, the world's most trusted news source in digital media when it comes to accurate, science-based reporting on the COVID-19 pandemic. From COVID-19 vaccine development to mask mandates, school shutdowns to job layoffs, The High Wire goes beyond providing you with the most accurate, evidence-based investigations. We send you links to the sources for all of our reporting so that you can further your own investigation and come to your own informed conclusions. High above the agenda-driven circus of mainstream media, we do not run. We do not hide from the truth. Instead, we walk the high wire. If you care about truth, then join us on Instagram, Twitter, Roku, and our website, thehighwire.com.
Informed Choice Washington is a nonprofit organization that advocates for healthy immunity, medical freedom, and fully informed medical consent. The right to make medical choices without coercion is fundamental to our civil liberties and a basic principle in all human rights declarations. To learn more, tune in each Friday from 3 to 5 p.m. to An Informed Life Radio and visit the website informedchoicewa.org. It's time to take a stand for medical freedom. Go to informedchoicewa.org. Today.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.